This is a 3CR podcast.
And this is Published or Not.
And a good morning to you. Well, we've got a bit of a problem this morning, Jan.
And what's that, Dad?
Well, we've got compares in here. Where's our author?
Well.
That was a deep breath. Actually, today's novel is going.
Surprise!
We're getting there. Today's novel is going to frighten the hell out of any prospective, or for that matter, current parent. The novel's title is The Mother of All Calamities, and the author is Jan. Who is the author?
Lisa Moore.
Hang on. No. She's a compere. She can't be an author.
Oh, she's on the other side of the microphone.
Oh, then she must be an author. If you're on the other side of the desk, you're an author.
She's been busy, not just reading. She's been writing.
Indeed, she has. In fact, Lisa, what's the journey so far? I mean, the Furphy Award was, I think, my first meeting with you, but how did it end up in a novel?
Yeah, so I guess I went back to uni. To start off with, I went back in 2019 and there I created this little story based on my frustrations with, you know, schools and parenting and whatnot, and then created this little story which came second in the Furphy Awards. And up until that point, I thought I was just doing this for a bit of fun. I think something just struck in my head, which was, oh, maybe I can actually do this anyway. So then I went on to publish a few more short stories and, you know, come runners up or, you know, this or that or being published. And then I steadily decided that I was going to formulate this novel. And then I did. It took only like 6 or 7 years in total, but obviously not, you know, committed 6 or 7. It was sort of on and off 6 or 7 years.
But parents, children, schools, it's sort of universal trouble.
Yeah.
There's an old argument as to whether it is nature or nurture that sets our behaviour. But when it comes to parenting, do we parent as our parents did or the exact opposite, or even get all our parenting skills from a book? So Lisa Moore has all these styles of parenting, a lot to think about and a lot of laughing in The Mother of All Calamities.
Oh. I'm so glad that you laughed.
Well, if you don't,
mission accomplished.
If you don't, you're going to cry. But who are the children in question? I'm thinking of two in particular that really are, well, would you call them problem children or just natural children?
Well, they really give some life, don't they? So they're accomplished at being themselves, let's put it that way. So Harmony is kind of the school bully, and Val is a child who, for whatever reason, is causing his parents a lot of trouble.
But you can go into the background behind some of these kids. I mean, Valentino, or just Val, ADHD?
I'm not going to diagnose him because his parents have decided, haven't come to that just yet. But until the end, we might have a little revelation. But even still, it's not a definite diagnosis.
Or is it just natural? I mean, just natural progression, because they're in grade three.
They're in grade three.
Do you label them at grade three?
Well, this is when, in my experience, when I had kids in grade three, it was around that time that it started to get serious, where the teachers would be having serious chats with parents about who needs to go off to the psychologist or psychiatrist and get a diagnosis around that time. And you could see, I mean, not everyone, because some people are very late diagnosed, but there were these conversations that were beginning to be had.
In all primary schools, there's a group of mums who, or parents, I should say, because there's a lot of stay-at-home dads now who join the group, and they've known each other for a while. You know, their kids get separated, but they still cling together in schoolyard chat.
Yeah.
And it's Jenny. So tell us a little bit about Jenny, because she leads this.
Jenny is sort of the alpha female in a way. She is like the mother of the mums. You know, she's the one on the group chat that answers everyone's trauma or traumatic midnight text saying, you know, is anyone available to pick up Phoenix, Arizona or Memphis? And she will say, I can. She's a cupcake maker. She kind of does that out of, that's a way of dealing with the trauma of her own child. And general life trauma is to bake these insane cupcakes. She is on the committee, you know, she's the parent association president. She's there. She's showing up. Big time.
And she's a good organiser.
She is, like, she's She's made for organisation.
Well, she worked with a political party.
Yes, well, she started that way. But then typically when she began to work in politics, she was usurped by the men in the room. What a surprise. So that did not work out for her the way that she'd hoped. So all of her energy is now being redirected into the school.
I like this. She worked for a political party wanting positive change, but when men were termed assertive, she was labelled as bossy. So now she's been reduced to a muffin-baking zombie. There's a lot to her, Jenny.
Muffins are very important. But
and Jenny's past life, she knew Estelle. They house shared together, and Estelle, very different to Jenny,
yeah.
And she's come to the school. So it's been Jenny who's got Estelle into the group.
Yes. So, yeah, Estelle arrived. She comes from Northcote. She's very floaty and, you know, esoteric, sort of very kind of creative impulses. But she arrives. She's very mesmeric, this woman. And Jenny recognises her and is completely bedazzled, you know, as everyone is with Estelle, and then she brings Estelle into the group.
But here we go. Here we get the other child, because Estelle's child is Harmony, appropriately named, of course. But it seems that Harmony runs the school, is more intelligent than the parents or the teachers.
Or the principal. Yeah.
So you get children like that as well. So you get a contrast between Valentino and his challenges as he develops. Harmony's who's already mentally overdeveloped or regressing quite rapidly.
I wanted to kind of show the way that sometimes the hierarchy is really actually flipped in a school where, in this situation, the principal, Brian, is a bit of a doddery old idiot and is actually scared of Harmony, Harmony knows. She's an 8-year-old, she's in grade 3, but she has everyone wrapped around her finger.
Well, children know how to play their parents. But here we go. We've now got the basis of the conflict that occurs in the novel, the main conflict, because there are lots of others, between basically Jenny and Estelle, good friends. What happens?
But before that, we look at this difference in children, and they're all managed by the Chrissy Petty, the teacher.
Oh, yes. Chrissy Petty, my favourite character. Chrissy Petty is used to dealing with everyone's nonsense, and she's a teacher that has all the answers, and yet her colleague, her male colleague, Tom, is promoted above her.
How did he get the job?
Well, he's in the boys' club, you know.
There you
go. He went to brunch with Hutchie when the email came in, and but up until this point, up until prior to the book starts, Chrissy has been mentoring Tom, you know, giving him some flashcards, helping him to, you know, proofread his lesson plans, giving him some ideas, proofreading his reports, that sort of thing. And then suddenly Tom comes through.
She's been usurped.
Yeah.
But it speaks to the helplessness of schools in some ways, the structures of schools.
Yeah.
The teacher who does all his lesson plans by what's available on a computer.
Yes, exactly, online.
Exactly. And then has the audacity to have a full-sized photo of him made
couple
into
cutout, yes, of himself.
So when he leaves the classroom, they can all talk to Major Tom.
Exactly. He says that he had the class cardboard cutout put in there so that they can, you know, it can take out some of the. They can go and speak to him and he can have a little bit of a rest, and if they need to go to the toilet, if he needs to go to the toilet, then they can just direct the questions to him.
Now, where there's mothers, there's fathers.
Yeah.
And it also goes into the relationship that these women have with their fathers. And the book starts with Jenny and her husband, Angus, having some bluey time.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Bluey time is code for the kids are occupied, so let's get down to it.
The chair has fallen across the bedroom door. Sorry about that.
Exactly.
But Angus, he really doubts his ability as a dad. And there's Jake, the stay-at-home dad, and Jethro, the quote, the man boy wore a moustache like a Christmas present.
Yeah.
Brad, not a man of words or warmth, and Estelle's partner, Pete. This is something she said to him. I'm tired of taking on Harmony's issues without any help from you, and I'm tired of all the mess in the house. Okay, we'll clean it up, says Pete.
Oh. Frustrating.
Now, some of the comedic stuff in this. A swing ball. Just one of those poles and a bat and a ball that you swing it around. I never realised you could get so much hurt and comedy out of antics.
Oh, I thank you. I'm so glad that you enjoyed that scene because I certainly loved writing that. I had to actually cut that back like about 4 million pages because it went on and on.
Because Belle eventually makes a friend, Blade. And then there's a swing ball catastrophe, which, you know, it was serious, but I couldn't stop laughing.
Great!
But the escalation of things, here they are. There's Jenny and Angus trying to help sort of Val get friends. They have a party. What happens at the party, as in the end result?
So when Blade and his brothers come over, the slumber party, yeah, so they have the swing ball competition. Things get out of hand. Angus, poor Angus, is trying to calm everyone. The boys are just whacking each other and then the swing ball gets stabbed into Angus's foot, which bleeds profusely. He turns white and falls down in all fours. One of the littlest one, baby Eden, has his nappy whipped off, and so he climbs on top of him and says, they say, shoot the horse. It rings out into a chant. And then they have a Nerf gun, which they do end up shooting him with. Yeah, in the end, he gets blood poisoning. He has to go to hospital.
You know, but there's $50 for the babysitter, and there's, you know, all of the, you know, with the best of intentions, let's help Val out by bringing some friends around for a party. No, we end up in hospital.
Well, yeah. Jenny has another friend, Viv, who's really down to earth.
Yeah.
And Viv's reaction to Blade, quote, he is an entitled, joyless little shit. And his mother, Casey, has borderline irresponsibility disorder. And you think, yep.
But this speaks to the conflict. Now that we've got these interesting and challenging children, we've got parents with a whole range of sort of approaches. Where then does the conflict come? And the main one between Jenny and Estelle?
Yeah, so there is a defining moment of conflict in the playground between Harmony and Jenny. So Jenny, the perfect mum who is just wrapping her arms around every single little person only because her son is perhaps the worst behaved in the whole world. And she's stretched. She is massively stretched. And then Harmony catches her by surprise, just in the sense that she's quite rude, perhaps unintentionally, but just, you know, how the way that she is. And Jenny completely loses it in the playground.
The mother of all calamities.
Yes.
It's just a little bit. Lisa Moore reading from the book.
The playground struck a library silence. Children froze in shock. There were dropped jaws and repulsed mummy expressions. Parents' association members formed a frieze of horror, clutching chests or their toddlers. Miss Petty, who was peering out from the steps of her classroom, struggled for breath.
Oh, so what went on there? You'll have to read the book to find out. Now, there's always advice. Quote, you put love in and you get love back. That's what Edmund says. And Edmund is quoted all the way through this book. All the parents look towards Edmund for advice.
Yes, so Edmund Potowski is the parenting guru, or, you know, the parenting expert who has a celebrity. He's so cool. He's like friends with Harry Styles.
Okay, here's a question for both of you. I haven't had kids, but you both have. How often did you, in raising your children, resort to self-help books for?
Oh, consistently.
Absolutely.
Consistently, like
that's
every dark night and day. It was reaching for I think when I lived in the UK, it was Gina Ford. We had, you know, the baby whisperer, and reaching for those. And that would be passed around parent groups, weren't they?
How to deal with controlled crying.
Oh, my God, which we now know is extremely harmful.
Yeah. And the big one in my era, Steve Bidulph on boys and raising them. There were challenges parents found there. So you've tapped into what is really what resonates through the parent body, basically. Mm, mm.
So, yeah, I wanted to, I was questioning some of the expert advice in the sense that I wondered, particularly with, you know, Edmund Patowski, my invented parenting guru, he's so good at giving advice, and yet I wonder exactly how much hands-on experience he has at home. I wonder who is doing the, you know, the bulk of the parenting and the difficult stuff. And I wondered if Edmund Patowski himself was cleaning up the kitchen, you know, because that's what it comes down to sometimes. It's who in hell is picking up their own stuff to make life easier.
Well, that's one of the little teasers, because we do actually find the answer to that at the end of the book.
Mm.
So we're not, can't give you anything away.
No.
But that's one little thread. Another one, basically, and we can't actually say what has happened, but a number of these parents are actually severely traumatized by their own experience before marriage, before children as well. And they bring that into the psychology of them raising their own children.
Yeah, I mean, that's a thing, isn't it? We inevitably, people bring their own joy and trauma into every experience, especially parenting. You know, parenting is one of those, you know, we don't have a handbook for this. But at the same time, are you thinking of something in particular?
Well, I think Estelle going back to re-find her mother after 15
yes,
years.
Yes, that's right.
And the drive that she takes up to the country. she's so nervous about it all. She stops halfway to have a joint. And her driving, you know, her clarity of thought. And
but the benefits one can have from a grandmother. I mean, I think we can give some of this one away in terms of the impact that Estelle's mother has on Harmony.
Yes, yeah. So Estelle's mum, Esme, is a Jehovah's Witness. And, you know, Estelle had to do some serious rebelling in her life in order to, you know, continue life.
Your soul needs to be saved.
Yes, exactly. Yes, yeah, yeah. So she tries then to save Harmony's soul, doesn't she?
And the rest of the parents.
Mm.
But it appeals to Harmony's nature, in as much as Harmony's wanting a sort of answers or affirmed sort of processes, because she's had so much liberty.
Mm.
And so this seems to be giving her a structure, which she then pursues.
That's right.
Like a fully fledged Mormon, because she hasn't yet got that level.
It's something
of
definitive. Yeah. She's finally gets something definitive.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, instead of, well, perhaps, darling, you know, it's suddenly, this is God. You will believe in God. That's what well, you know, if you believe in God, then these things will happen.
Mm.
And so she takes it hook, line, and sinker, and she's now transformed, and she behaves for the first time, because she's really wanting to get close to God and her grandmother.
But then she tries to impose that on her parents.
Yes, exactly. So then, you know, Pete, her dad, Estelle's husband, who is a psychologist and he works in hallucinogenics. So, you know, he's very loose in a way. So, you know, Pete is like, has been basically zoned out the whole of Harmony's childhood. And at this point, when she says, I'm worried for your souls, he suddenly wakes up.
Hmm. That's one backstory. But we have an intriguing other one of Viv. She's the mum who decides to go back to work. And where she wants to work is the police. And why she wants to work there is all linked with her backstory, which is really just, oh my goodness, this is a whole new thread through the book, which was really rather fascinating. And then there's Dexter. Now, he comes to the school in term two to give a talk, and he is an inappropriate guest speaker, shall we say.
Yes, he's an aging man. He comes on the 100th day of school, and so they're trying to angle for someone who's about 100, and he keeps professing that he is, although he's not. Every year he's 100. Mm. He's just looking for someone to listen to him, basically.
And some bottom to smack.
That's right. Yeah.
He's such a misogynist, and I love how he fell from grace in Estelle's vomit. You've got to read the book to find out why. So term two ends with a meeting in the principal's office with Jenny using a firm hand to undo Pete's fingers from around Angus's throat.
Yes. It's a meeting that doesn't kind of end the way you would have hoped, with a little note.
Yes, so we go into term three, and the crux of this is a surprise party in the classroom for Miss Petty. Everybody loves her, and they want to celebrate both her birthday and her coming up wedding. There's just a few things that go wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
Her engagement ring gets stolen.
Yes, it does.
That's now, interesting.
Yes, yes.
And every classroom has an EpiPen, and that leads into an ambulance, a cold case discovery, and a death. So there's, you know, wow. Term four is really short.
Parenting and even working in schools, you're actually on the edge. I mean, the EpiPen is comic and what takes place there, but you're on the verge of catastrophe at all times in schools, in the parenting household, etc., because you've got to take care of people with anaphylaxis and all of these other conditions of which we're now aware. Mm. So there's a frightening element to this book.
Exactly. Let me just add, so in the party, the Miss Petty's party, there is a little bag which has some, what they think is
sugared almonds. For the wedding.
For the wedding. And then, as you can imagine, something happens. We won't say exactly what, but, and it gets conflated and then things get out of control. At my launch party tonight, my mum has organised little bags full of sugared almonds.
And an EpiPen.
Without the EpiPen, unfortunately. So if you come along to the launch tonight, you'll get to have a little takeaway of one of those.
Where's the launch, by the way?
Oh, it's in Carlton Readings tonight at 6 o'clock. Please
and
come
Tony
along.
And Tony Jordan.
Tony Jordan is launching it. How blessed am I to have her?
Yeah. Look, it's how many edits do you think you did?
So it goes through three stages of editing with the publisher, pretty extensive. I think for me to get to this point before that, I'd probably written the book twice at least.
Yeah. And how did you get it to Alan and Unwin?
So when I finished uni and I had finished my manuscript at that time, I then sent it out to some agents and I was lucky enough to get two agents on the same day.
Oh,
and I chose Samuel at Zeitgeist, who is absolutely wonderful. And then we worked on that together a little bit, and then he submitted it and we settled with Alan and Unwin, which was wonderful.
And how did you get it past your kids? I mean, how did you have enough time whilst raising kids to write? And how did you get it and what did your kids think of it?
Well, one, I got up really early in the morning, like 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock, to start writing every day since 2019. The morning is the best part of the writing brain for me. And then as the book drew towards the end, I could sort of do editing all day, all night, and potentially at work, at lunch break, in the car, you know, whatever, just squeezing it in around the edge. So the kids, I've tried to tell them that I've written a book, but they just keep talking about, you know, like where they're going on the weekend or...
And if they need an EpiPen.
Yeah, exactly. Or I'll let them come to it when they're ready.
Have you warned them that they might see themselves in this book?
They won't see themselves. They're not Harmony or Val or any Blade other child, but I think they will recognise a lot of stuff. I mean... I've just, you know, everyone, when they write, they just pluck stuff from all aspects of their life, and I've definitely done that. Not that there's one person I'm drawing on at all, but there's just an array of different moments and different voices.
But here's the problem. Now that you've given away what Bluey is, what excuse are you going to give to your children? Or is this going
That's
too far?
Jenny. That's Jenny, not me.
Now, quite often our listeners think, well, once you've published the book, it's all happened. But we know how difficult it is to get that book out there.
It's so hard. Yeah. So it's definitely not a done deal. Now I think the other type of work starts. Yeah, trying to engage with there, even though the bookstores might have it, but it might just drift to the back. So I hope it doesn't. I really do hope it gets some traction. I hope people read it. I hope people, you know, recognise those characters and enjoy the scenes and communicate that with me.
So it's going to go in the self. It's going to go in the self-help section of the bookstore.
even things like getting it into libraries.
Yeah. So it is in a few libraries, which is really good. We've got this fantastic publicist called Sam Ryan, who's done a brilliant job of getting an article of mine in The Age. And
oh,
then,
yes,
and
I
then
read
Jason
that. That
Stiger's.
Was for older
yes.
children.
Yes, yeah. Mm. Jason Stiger's, you know,
Books
list.
Of the Month.
Yeah, that's right. So that's been great. Oh, in Women's Weekly as well. So, yeah, I'm hoping that it, you know, people can see it. I hope people really want to have fun. Like, it sounds to me like you guys enjoyed it, and that is worth everything to me. Yeah.
Oh, so. We just wanted to take it apart on radio.
Lisa Moore has reminded us about the joys and hazards of parenting by bringing alive the problems and delights of a year in grade three. Things go right and very wrong in the mother of all calamities.
Parents would be parents tremble.
Thanks so much, Lisa.
Thank you so much for having me, my literary parents.
You've just been listening to Published or Not on 3CR.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.